Hello and welcome to the Farming Advice Service podcast. This is the second of two of our alternative podcast formats featuring the question and answer section from our January webinar on the Sustainable Farming Incentive announcements with Janet Hughes and Jonathan Marsden. If you haven't already listened to the first of these, you might find it useful to pause and listen to that first. But if you're only interested in the Q&A, please enjoy this recording. It starts pretty abruptly at the beginning of that question session, so please excuse my short introduction before we jump straight in.
We've been doing lots of work to test with farmers what's the best way to present this information, because it's not necessarily a great fat handbook for everybody. Some people really like that, agents in particular really like that, people who are already very comfortable with schemes like that, but people who are not don't want a great big document, and we have absolutely clocked that, and we've started building a bit more of a checker type thing. So you can say, I'm this kind of farm, I'm interested in these kind of things, which are the actions that are most useful to me? Some of the other things we're looking at doing are things like, here's a starter pack of things, farms like yours, these are the sorts of things people tend to do, the most common actions, things that work together, whatever. You can flex that if you want to, but here's a kind of somewhere to start. So we are working on that with a view to introducing more of that type of functionality from this summer, and we'll carry on building that out because we do want to make it as easy as possible for people to find what they want without having to read policy documents, which not everyone enjoys as much as I do, I realise.
Yes, absolutely.
So do you want us to start rattling through the, should we do questions just in order of how many people have asked for the answer on them?
Yes. So, okay. So top question in the Slido, first of all, which has 48 upvotes, is do fields need to be mapped as priority habitat on MAGIC to get the species rich grassland option? So going straight in with a technical question.
No. Jonathan, no. say a little bit more than no.
So we know the priority habitats data layer is not perfect. We know there's a lot of grassland habitats out there that aren't on the layer. If your fields or your parcel of land isn't on the map, but you feel it is species rich grassland, then we're going to bring in this facility for an advisor to come out and endorse, support your that action on that field. And again, to make up for those deficiencies in that data set. So it won't need to be on the data layer to qualify, but it will need to be species rich grassland or creating the species rich grassland.
What we'll do is then we'll kind of update the maps on the basis of that in due course, but you won't be delayed in getting in until that happens. And we know there's been some worry about that, but we do try and we try and look at the practicality of these things. And we know that practically, obviously it'd be ideal if we had a perfect map with all the data on it, but we don't. So we can't be restricting people's access on that basis. Go on, next.
No, go ahead. This one has come from both, which is handy. I don't know if there's a definite answer for this, but I will ask it. Mm-hmm. When will BPS non-eligible farmers, obviously BPS are now having finished, be able to apply for SFI?
This summer. So this new offer will be open to people who have not been eligible for BPS. BPS has now been delinked, so you won't be making a claim for BPS now this year. So apart from anything else, every year from now on, that is a less and less useful way of doing it, particularly if you're a new entrant who's come in the last couple of years and hasn't claimed BPS or been eligible for it. And that's not fair on new entrants in particular, but also smaller farms who wouldn't have been eligible. So that'll be this year. You can already go into CES if you're not a BPS claimer, but you'll be able to go into SFI as well.
Great. So the next question is about CES. So that's a very handy segue. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So there's a number of questions along this theme, so I'm going to ask it in a slightly more general way, but we might pick up on a couple of specifics. For those who are already in kind of size stewardship, particularly higher level is coming up in the questions, now the new SFI option appears potentially more attractive.
Yeah.
What are the options for coming out of either an agreement or an extension to put those same parcels of land into a different kind, whether it's a new higher tier, a mid tier, or an SFI?
Yeah, so I think this is about higher level stewardship, isn't it? And increasingly now we're getting asked that question by people in higher level stewardship. A couple of years ago, what people in high level stewardship understandably wanted at that time was a bit more security. So we stopped offering 1 year rollovers and started offering 5 year rollovers to give people certainty that they were going to be able to carry on for that period. What we've now done is introduce a rule that you can come out of that at a point of your choosing into another agreement, as long as it's equivalent. Yep. One of the things we're working on is making that a bit more simple and straightforward, because how do you define equivalence? You could spend 4 months on the farm checking it all out, like at the most, obviously we're not going to do that, but you could have a really sort of extreme pernickety way of interpreting that, or a more pragmatic way of interpreting it. And we're looking at how we can streamline that and make it work for people. We've made it so that you can end your HLS at a point of your choosing. So it used to be the case that if it finished in February, you'd have a big long gap before you went into CS in January. But now, because of the way the rolling windows work, you'll be able to go straight from one to the other. We're just coming to the end of a bit of a task and finish piece of work to work out what else can we do to make this easy for people, either to do some of the things that are available in CS and SFI alongside HLS, or to just move wholesale into a new agreement. If you're the other aspect of this question, that's HLS. And what's really important here is we don't want anybody to feel like they're disadvantaged or being left behind in any way. We want everybody to have maximum access to the things that are on offer. And that's in the interest of farmers to generate the income. And it's also in the interest of us achieving all of those outcomes that I mentioned earlier, because we really want people to participate. So we don't want any bureaucratic hurdles in the way. So whenever we see those, we try and get them out of the way as much as we possibly can. So we've done some of that on HLS, but we're just having a look now to see what else can we do this year to make that work more easily. And we think equivalence is the first one, and the process for moving from one to the next could be smoother, and we're working on that too. And then if you're in CS now and you want to get access to these new options, you've got two ways of doing that. You can either, and your agreement doesn't finish this year, you can either add on an extra agreement along the side to do some extra things, or you can move from one to the other if that's what you want to do. And again, we're beginning to see increased demand for that, and that's a great sign from our perspective, because it means people are seeing the new offer as attractive and something that they want to do. But we've got to make that process really smooth for people, so we're also doing a piece of work now we have already started to see demand for this, but what we want to do is make sure that that's really smooth for everybody. It's absolutely clear how to do it over the course of this year, so as we open that offer, we'll also make it really clear how you'll be able to do that. And then the idea is, at the moment, you can amend your SFI agreement once a year. We are going to expand that to also cover all of the scope that's in CS mid-tier as well. And you'll also be able to continue to have additional agreements on the side if that's what you want to do. So this is all about sort of trying to offer maximum flexibility with minimum complexity, because sometimes when you make it flexible, what you accidentally do is introduce more complexity, and we don't want to do that. So we're always trying to sort of move forward on both of those two fronts, simplify it and make it more flexible at the same time. And that is an ongoing quest. So I definitely do not think we can declare ourselves done on that one yet. But we have made some progress, but there's more to do. Shorter answers. The one specific thing to say about that is, if you've got a concern about your particular situation, the best thing to do is contact RPA and ask them what to do, because for each particular situation, there'll be a slightly different route forward depending on what it is that you exactly that you want to do. So please do contact RPA if you're in any doubt or you're worried about what particularly you're going to be able to do and how to do it.
Good. You actually preempted my next question, which is very helpful, which was, if I am a farmer watching this webinar and I'm thinking, actually, this stuff looks better than what I'm doing, both in terms of environmental delivery, but also the payment rates, I know that I won't be able to necessarily make an application until the summer, but I want to get ahead. You know, maybe it's a quiet time for some people and they want to start looking at, you know, these actions will go on these parcels. Now is a good time to do that, but they should also be contacting the RPA to kind of flag up their interest and see what their next steps will be.
Yeah, they can do if they've got questions. I mean, the thing to do, I would say, there's an offer available now, SFI, with 23 actions in it. If there are any of those that you want to do, then crack on and get into that scheme, because the sooner you get in, the sooner you're going to start getting paid. So if you enter the scheme, you'll start it on the first of the month after you accept the agreement, and then you'll start getting paid in your fourth month. So you'll get paid quarterly. So just after the end of the third month, you'll get your first payment. So the sooner you get in, the sooner you'll get that payment. And then you'll be able to add in new actions as and when they're available, either waiting for your anniversary and adding them in at that point, or if you really want to do it sooner than that and you fancy having multiple agreements and you're into that sort of complexity, then you can have an extra one along the side. It's up to you. I should say, by the way, we want to get to a point where you don't have to have, where you can amend your agreement anytime you like. But that is complicated, and we don't want to run before we can walk. We've introduced a lot more flexibility in recent times, and we've got to make sure that's working and solid and stable for everybody. And then we can carry on adding more flexibility as we go. So that's the kind of direction of travel, really.
Okay, thank you. Right. I think we have actually addressed the top couple. The next one down actually is a bit more broad reaching, hopefully quite a short answer, but can you explain the difference between SFI and Countryside Stewardship, and why can't they just be one scheme with different options within that?
Yeah, good question. And I don't know whether it's the individual that posted that question, but there is one individual in particular who's been saying this for ages, and he's right. He's called Richard, but there are others as well. You're right, actually, we should do that. And that's what we're going to do this summer. So we're going to have a combined offer for everything that's currently available in mid-tier and SFI will be available through a single service. You'll be able to have a single agreement and see it all in the same place and not have to have the hassle of two different agreements. What will remain separate is higher tier agreements, which are a bespoke competitive process. But one of the things we're trying to do is make some of the actions that have only been available through higher tier special agreements much more widely available through the sort of approach Jonathan was just talking about, where if you want to do a particular action, like creating some particular type of habitat alongside all of the rest of your SFI type agreement, then you ought to have access to that. And you shouldn't have to have a fully bespoke agreement just to be able to do that. So we've got some ways to be able to increase access to those actions. But yes, I think that is a fair point. And all of the evidence that we've seen in the last couple of years suggests that that person saw it before we did. Thank you very much for telling us. We did listen and we've acted on what you've had to say. More slowly than you would have liked, I know. But as you have often said on the Farming Forum, we would get there. Well, we have now. There you go.
Richard's happy. Okay, thank you very much. Jonathan, this next one might be for you about agroforestry options. Can you give us an overview of what that will look like, payment rates, definitions, etc.?
So, first of all, why are we doing agroforestry? And the simple answer is we need more trees in our farmed landscape if we're going to get near our climate targets in particular. And there are other benefits to trees. It's not just carbon. Now, historically, and this was sort of enshrined within EU law, there was agricultural land and there was woodland and forestry, and never the twain shall meet. Agroforestry blurs that line. So agroforestry is about integrating trees within the farming operation. There are some bits of regulation that we need to dance around here, which are important because it sets out why we need the different densities of trees, so many trees per hectare for low, medium and high. First of all, if you create woodland, then you need to go through a whole set of processes regarding environmental impact assessments, the Forestry Commission need to be involved, etc., etc. And the definition of woodland, depending on the pattern of trees are being planted, it's roughly around 100 stems per hectare gets you into your creating woodland. So there will be higher tier versions of agroforestry that are operating at above 100 trees per hectare. But we also want to make this available to people without having to go through all of that process. So there will also be agroforestry offers that operate at below 100 trees per hectare, and they will sit within SFI. There are also particularly sensitive areas or particularly sensitive habitats. So, for example, if you're in a national park where landscape is incredibly important, or if it's potentially species-rich grassland or there's archaeology, then there's going to need to be some input from an advisor. The final bit of this is, and I know we've had a question, so I'll try and cover it off now, but what's the difference between agroforestry and wood pasture? Wood pasture is a particular habitat type. It's that habitat consists of both the trees and the grassland that the trees are on. So a wood pasture option, in much the same way as a species rich grassland option, the whole parcel goes into that action, and the requirements cover both the grazing and the management of the trees. That's wood pasture. Agroforestry is an action that will be stackable on normal agricultural land. And what you're doing between those trees in an agroforestry system, you may be growing wheat and you would be eligible if you meet the requirements to do the mill insecticide, or you could do your cover crops, your pollen and nectar mix, or you can graze, plant herbal lays, legume rich grassland. So agroforestry is more stackable, and you can be doing essentially what you like between those trees, whereas wood pasture is a sort of what we would call a whole system, a whole parcel. It's not stackable by and large with other actions.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. Do we know what definition low, medium and density is yet, or is that an announcement that's going to be coming out?
It's an announcement to come, but it'll be based around the number of stamps per hectare.
Great. Thank you very much. Come back to the higher tier countryside stewardship, if I may. Mm-hmm. When will it begin? I know we haven't got specific dates, but the follow-up question is, will it be by invite only with year-round windows, or will the application process be different?
Thank you for the question. So it will be open in the summer at the same time as the rest of the offer, and it will be a rolling application window rather than a short application window. And there's two reasons for that. One, it's easier and more useful for farmers and land managers if you can apply to time of your choosing, but secondly it means we can manage a bigger volume because we can manage them over the course of the year instead of having one peak and you need everybody to do all the work at that peak time of year, which means you've got to kind of limit on how many applications you can process. And one of the things that we've said we're going to do is double our capacity to process higher tier applications because we know more people want to come in than we're currently allowing. So we'll start in the summer. There'll be a rolling application window. It's not invite only. So Natural England do specifically engage with people that they think have got suitable land and suitable ambition to come into higher tier. And they do go and do that outreach and engagement. And that's the right thing for them to do, I think, because they've got particular objectives that they're trying to meet in respect of protected sites, for example. However, that doesn't mean you can't apply on spec if you want to. We did have applications last year that were successful from people who had not been invited but had decided they wanted to apply. I think the thing we've got to make better here is three things. Number one, if you want to do some actions that are more complex or ambitious, that doesn't necessarily mean you need a fully bespoke agreement with a whole lot of bespoke and you need to go into the competitive scheme. So as I said earlier, we want to make more of those actions available through the mainstream offer, and you can just get advice on those specific things or endorsement on those specific things to be able to get your agreement rather than the whole lot having to be bespoke. The second thing is allowing more people to get in where what they need is a bespoke agreement. But and then the third thing is, if they're not successful in a competition to get into higher tier, that shouldn't be a dead end and a wasted effort. So we want to be able to, like, if somebody wants to do stuff and it's suitable to do on their land, we want them to do it. We don't want to have bureaucratic barriers to that. So those three aspects, kind of increasing our ability to take applications where that is the most appropriate type of agreement to have, making the actions more widely available where you don't need a fully bespoke agreement, and then providing a route forward in a smooth way for people who thought they were going into higher tier but actually need to go into a different offer. All those things combined should take the sort of rough edges off this process and make it more accessible to people. And higher tier was conceived as a sort of niche, competitive, highly ambitious scheme at a time when we weren't trying to get absolutely maximum uptake because we couldn't have afforded it in the budget, because most of the budget was being spent on basic payments. Now, what we're trying to do is maximise uptake of all the schemes, and we really want to attract people into these higher ambition schemes, and we don't want to have any bureaucratic barriers to it, and that's why we're shifting the approach in that way. So it'll be this summer. We'll confirm the dates as soon as we possibly can, because I realise summer is a season, not a date, and that's not the most helpful if you're trying to make a plan. I just don't want to promise a date now that I'm not yet ready to do. I'd rather say a date when we've got all of the arrangements in place around it, and we must be able to stick to it when we set it. So we're not quite ready to do that, but we will be shortly, and we'll do that as soon as we can.
Okay, thank you. Related question, which also picks up, Jonathan, on your point about the possibility of needing a visit if a high priority habitat isn't mapped. Can we assume similar entry criteria for options and actions like species rich grassland, arable reversion, orchards needing approval? I think the question there is around, if it's not already mapped but you have it and you want to put it into a scheme, will the criteria for those things be similar to current CS options, and will the process for approval be the same, sending somebody out to have a look?
So it's likely to be similar. The process itself is likely to be similar. So somebody coming out to have a look, the mechanisms, both, you know, front of house and behind the house, may change a little bit. There may be some efficiencies we can bring to that. The criteria, if they're existing actions, there may be a few changes. A lot of the work we've done this year is trying to make them more available in more situations, and there might be adjustments to eligibility criteria, but those will be specific to the particular action. So obviously the criteria for species rich grassland will be very different to an orchard, for example. We'll be publishing all of that in you know, the details of that in due course. This isn't going to be sort of hidden behind the scenes. We want everybody to be quite clear what they can and can't do.
Great, thank you. And will you be recruiting more Natural England staff? I know that CSF had a big increase in their CSFOs last year, and some of those guys do this kind of thing when it's an option that requires CSF approval.
Yeah.
What's the stance on that?
So Natural England are in charge of how many staff they recruit, and I don't set their kind of budgets or recruitment targets. However, we do work together to work out how can we make most effective use of the capability that they have. And so some of the things that we can do from DEFRA on that are not having requirements for Natural England to endorse things where that's not actually the most useful use of their time, because what Natural England want to do is be able to really target their efforts where it's going to have the most impact, either because it's the highest risk area or the most complex or high ambition activity, or it's aligned to their statutory responsibilities with regard to protected sites. So we can facilitate that through the design of schemes. And part of what we can do there is to say, well, actually, this particular thing, does it have to be any that endorse it, or could it be somebody else with the relevant qualification? And so we can broaden out, and actually that helps channel more, that helps support the kind of ecosystem of the sector as well, doesn't it? If we're kind of enabling that wider use of expertise, and it means that farmers don't have to rely on, we're not kind of constrained by Natural England's level of capacity in any particular area in quite the same way. So from our perspective in the programme, what we're trying to do is make sure that we're not putting in place requirements that excessively put a burden on Natural England so that they can target their efforts, and we make wider use of that expertise. And then I know Natural England are working on learning from the catchment sensitive farming offer, which has been popular relative to lots of other offers. That's quite a popular offer with farmers, and we often hear feedback to say, oh, these folk turn up and they do actually get farming, and they can actually point me towards sources of funding and useful things like that. They're not just coming with a clipboard to kind of inspect me, but they are actually trying to help me. And so I know NE and actually EA and RPA have been looking at how can we learn from that approach to broaden it out to cover a wider range of topics and to take that sort of pragmatic, helpful approach more broadly as well. And so there's kind of targeting and how the advice and the consents offered. And then the final thing is we're always looking to improve business processes within and between the bodies that are involved here, so Forestry Commission, Natural England, EA and RPA in particular. And we host a sort of forum for those bodies to talk to each other about, well, if you're giving a grant for slurry over here, there's not much use of you over here, refusing to give consent for it, for example, and try and have that conversation to smooth the way. And we're all about trying to streamline and simplify and make things work better, basically, for people. And that, again, is an ongoing quest. I wish I could wave a magic wand and make all of those things work better immediately, but I'm not able to do that. But we are able to carry on, just keep pushing every day to make things a bit better here and a bit better there, make the odd leap forward, and over time we get to a better position is the idea. So you should be seeing signs of that, and you will see more signs of it over the next few years, because we shan't rest till we're done.
Good to hear. Thank you. Right, this next one's a bit of a curveball. I certainly don't know the answer, and it may be that it needs to be referred to one of our RPA or other colleagues, but I'll ask the question, and you are full of hidden wisdom, so we shall see. Has DEFRA liaised with HMRC, and will they confirm that land in SFI is classified as agricultural farming for the purposes of IHT, which I think is inheritance tax?
Yes, it is. So we have liaised with Treasury. Treasury lead on tax issues. So they ran a consultation last year about this question. They've been digesting the responses. They do, of course, talk to DEFRA because all these decisions are made across government. Because it's tax, it is a Treasury issue. So you should expect Treasury at some point in due course to come out with their response to that consultation. We're aware that there are some issues around this, and government are aware and Treasury are aware, but I can't comment on it in the sense of giving the answer, because that's up to Treasury and they will do that in due course.
Okay, thank you.
If you, by the way, though, I should say, so the definition is about if you're doing farming. So a lot of the stuff in SFI is clearly farming. So I just because of what I've just said, there's been a consultation, like there is an existing set of rules around this. The question is, how wide does the definition of agriculture go, and can it include the sort of actions where you're actually taking land out of production for a period of time, or transfer, changing the land use? And that's what the consultation's about. And that's the bit that Treasury are going to opine on. If you're in doubt, get some advice from your tax advisor or any other sort of advisor about your particular situation. I obviously can't advise on individual tax issues.
Okay, next one. What is the purpose of needing to update land use now that BPS has gone? One common issue when applying for SFI is incompatible land cover or land use.
Yeah, that's a right pain, we know. It was the best way we had to deal with the issue of what land is eligible for which actions for the SFI when we opened the 2023 offer last year. But we have been looking at how we can make that better and less complicated for people. So you should expect to see improvements on that in the 2024 offer. I can't say what they are yet because I don't know, but we're well aware that that's a pain for people and that there must surely be a better way of doing it. And so that's what we're looking at. So it might not be perfect this year, but it is definitely on our agenda to make that better. I mean, the reason we have it is because we need to establish that the land is eligible for the action that you are going to undertake on it. So we need to know if you've got an orchard, we don't really want to pay you for species rich grassland instead of an orchard or vice versa. So we need to have some way of assessing what type of land it is and what is on it, and therefore is it appropriate to do this action on it. But we definitely, I would accept that this is not a very simple way of doing it, and we have it on our agenda to make it better.
Oh, this next question, I've heard you comment on it before and I'm loath to ask it, but people want to know the answer, although
that's okay, fire away.
Proviso that you do not have a crystal ball.
No, if only I did.
How future-proof are schemes with changes in government expected this year?
Yeah, so I'm not a politician, obviously. I'm a civil servant and I'm not in charge of what any future government might decide they want to do. What I would say, though, is we have a solid, I think, agreed in government planning position, which is that we expect what we're building to endure. And that seems like a reasonable expectation, given that all of the main political parties are saying that that's what they would do. And the debate seems to be around who would do the best job, how much money would they apply to this, where would they focus their efforts, where do they think things are not yet where they should be, etc. And so if you look at the Oxford Farming Conference speeches, for example, that's what they were saying. And so my expectation at this stage, based on the information I have available to me, is that we will be carrying on rolling out these ELM schemes in broadly the shape they're in now. But there is always, what we're trying to do with these schemes is we're not trying to do them as a project that's then done and go, well, that's finished then. Because if we do that, whatever happens, we will be in a position at some point where they're now out of date and not working well for everybody. Because what we've got to do is make them into continuously improving schemes. And as part of that, they've got to be able to flex, not just to changes in political priorities, which will happen within the same party or different parties, as we've seen over time, but also things that we learn from science, things that we learn from feedback from our customers, things that we see actually happening on the ground in terms of do these things actually work or not. So we've got to make them flexible. So what we tend to assume is the broad architecture now is pretty stable, but we will carry on evolving it over time in an increasingly orderly way. So we'll be coming out of the major change period and into continuous improvement, and that we need to be able to flex in that way, and there shouldn't be sort of major dramatic changes. We should be able to accommodate those within the architecture. But as I say, I'm not a politician. It's up to everybody on the call who they vote for, and it's up to those people who are voted for to decide what they think the political direction is, and it's my job to advise on that and implement it for whoever the government of the day is. So that's what we will do, isn't it, Jonathan?
Absolutely.
Well, if you do ever decide to run, Janet, you...
I would not touch that with an absolute barge pole, but thank you very much for that kind comment. I'm very happy being probably a humble functionary.
I think that's probably a wise choice. So, question around clarification from RPA and delays in responses. Obviously, some of that will be because the responses just aren't available yet. Mm. The nature of the fact that people can apply for all sorts of different things is likely to mean that they're going to be receiving an increasingly wide range of potentially complex queries.
Yes.
What, if any, is the approach to ensuring that the RPA continue to be able to develop so that they can manage all of those queries in the best way?
Yeah, so I don't run the RPA, but I do work in very close partnership with them, as does everybody in the programme. And so there's a lot we can do in the team that I am responsible for to make sure that what we're offering is clear and workable, and that we roll it out in a sensible way that gives RPA colleagues time to get their heads around it before it's launched and they're expected to answer questions about it. I think it's fair to say that there's been huge improvement, I think the RPA would be able to point to, in the RPA's performance in terms of making payments, responding to queries, getting agreements out. They're getting agreements out really very quickly on SFI now. And I think it's fair also to say that the change we've brought about in the design of the schemes is huge and fundamental. So we used to have schemes with very specific prescriptions. So if you ran the RPA, they could read out the relevant prescription to you. We now have flexible schemes. And although that's something that farmers have asked us for, and it's, I think, overwhelmingly a benefit to the sector, and that's why the schemes are more attractive, because of the way we've managed controls historically, a lot of people see that flexibility as risk because they're worried that we've got some secret rules somewhere, and if we get it wrong, they're going to get fined and we're going to kind of come down on them like a ton of bricks. We're not going to do that. If you like deliberately don't do anything at all or kind of destroy your natural environment, then you should expect somebody to notice that and do something about it. But in general terms, everybody's trying to be more flexible and more pragmatic and all that kind of thing. And it is going to take time to become really, really effective in managing that. And I think if we want that change, we have to be prepared to accept that if you ring them up wanting to know a prescription, you're not going to get one because we don't do that anymore. And we don't want to be backed into every time we get asked a question, writing down a prescription. So what RPA colleagues have got to do is a very different task now. And that is, That worry drives people to want something that we're not bluntly going to give them, because we're not going to say, here's the prescription. We're going to say, do the right thing for your farm. And we've got to prove that the controls that go with that are indeed pragmatic and fair and proportionate. And I think, in fairness to RPA colleagues, they're being in this instance, like, that you could blame them for not giving the prescription. And actually, that's me. That's not by RPA. That's ministers and DEFRA that have decided not to make it prescriptive. So I think, I can't speak for the RPA, but I'm sure if they were here, they would say, we are working really hard on this and we really want to offer this pragmatic, proportionate, flexible service. Do we think it's perfect yet? No. Are we going to carry on working on it to make it really, really as best as it can possibly be? Absolutely, we are. And if you have a specific concern, then do keep getting in touch with them and escalate it until you get it resolved, because obviously nobody wants to have people confused or not getting the answers that they need. And you'll see RPA along with the programme hand in hand out and about all agriculture shows and events and auction marts and farm visits and all that kind of thing. And there's a new customer director, Marie Hardiman, who arrived last year, who is specifically tasked with like really improving customer service and building on all the great work that's already there and taking it forward to make sure that it aligns with the intent of making these schemes flexible and pragmatic. So that is all. Everybody is committed in the same direction. Absolutely nothing that any of us are doing is perfect yet. Probably will never be, but hopefully it'll get better and better over time. And that's what we're all trying to do.
Thank you. This is an interesting one. Okay, Al, around what is considered proof of achieving aims. So I suppose it's a bit of a double-sided question. One is, are there options where proof, what kind of proof will be required as evidence that you're doing what you've agreed to do? And how will that be collected or requested as part of the kind of agreement assessment?
Good question. So the answer is enough to show what you've done and that you've done it. That is basically the answer. You judge what enough looks like. But Jonathan, do you want to say a bit more about that?
I can add a little bit. So for those that aren't aware, AHL2 is winter bird food in arable land. So what we will be expecting to see over those winter months, that we've got sources of seed available, particularly small seeds for farmland birds, and then in the spring and summer, some flowering taking place of those crops, those plants in those plots. In terms of taking photographs of each plot, it's useful to have. Everybody's got a camera on the phone these days as you're wandering around or undertaking your normal activities, you know, take photos. Actually, even short videos can often tell a better story. And just keep those either on your phone or set a folder up on your computer and move them over and just have them. And if nothing else, it's a useful record for yourself of how things are changing, what lessons you can learn, this one looks particularly good compared to that one, what did I do different? So it's a learning resource for yourself.
And also, I think a lot of the things we're asking you to keep are things you would ordinarily be keeping anyway, so you're probably going to keep your receipts and your records of sowing and drilling and whatever, aren't you? So like, this is not a huge overhead on top of what you're already doing. Just take a few snaps while you're at it is what we're basically saying.
Yeah.
But I can understand what I suspect what's driving that question is exactly the issue I was just talking about before, which is it is going to take some time to show everybody in a consistent, enduring way the change in the way controls are managed. So, because this is not about, well, you must take exactly 12 photographs on this particular date. It's about keeping enough evidence to show that you've had a good crack at it and you've done something that was sensible to try and achieve the aim, and we'll have a sensible conversation about it. But that, I can say that till I'm blue in the face, and so can RPA, but you have got to see it in an enduring, consistent way over time, haven't you? And we do appreciate that and respect it. And so we're not trying to be cute when we kind of go, oh, it's up to you. We're trying to kind of go through this hump of building the trust in the way that we want to operate, because the prize is so important. If we can get there and we can get to a proper business-like relationship where people don't feel like they're being caught out and penalized and kind of hung out to dry, but they feel like we're trying to work with them and support them and have a business-like relationship with them, that's such a big prize. And I've lost count of the number of farmers that have told me how much they'd like to see that, but how little faith they have that we can actually get there. So I think it's really important to recognize what's, if it's not driving that particular question, it's drives a lot of others. And we do know that, and we recognize it, and we've got to just keep going and show that we're serious.
What I'll just add to what Janice just said is, when we were in the EU, the sort of what was driving all of this was fraud and error. And if something wasn't absolutely right, then you needed to apply a penalty, because that would, you know, frighten, stop people doing it wrong.
And to be clear, just when you say what's driving it is fraud and error, it's the perception of risk of fraud and error, not that we were seeing high levels of fraud or error, but we had a very close definition of what they were, and we were required to very closely guard it. I think that's the thing, isn't it?
And the thinking behind that was that would, you know, if you like, frighten people into doing it right. Well, what it did was frighten people away from schemes for a start.
So
the new approach is very much, if things aren't quite right, what we all want is these agreements to work. Mm. We want these actions to work. So the approach is going to be supporting everybody involved to get these agreements to work, so we all get what we need for both our businesses as farmers, but also for the natural environment.
So that's why we have flexible schemes and flexible proportionate controls that go with them. That's where we're trying to get to. But I think we've got to recognise the negative impact that era had on the sector's confidence in all of us. And so we recognise that, we take on the chin, and we are working hard to try and turn that around. And that's the most difficult, and it's probably going to take the longest to get right, but it's actually the most important part of what we're doing here in terms of the reforms we're trying to bring about. Because if you don't get that right, this isn't going to work for everybody.
Yeah, it comes down to trust, doesn't it?
I think
lots of the conversations I've had with people about the new schemes, people come to work, but there needs to be trust in both sides.
Yeah, and the thing about trust is, my favourite saying about trust is that it arrives on foot and leaves on horseback.
So that one.
And that's what happens. So it's not easy to build trust, because one cock up and you're back to square one. It's a snakes and ladders kind of situation, to mix my metaphors, isn't it? But we've got to keep going.
Right. Let's pick up the next one, which is a little bit more technical. And Jonathan, I think probably one for you. Oh, they're moving around. Right. I'll do the agroforestry one, and then there's one on IPM4 as well. Mm-hmm. Agroforestry, there's been news of the annual maintenance payments. There's been no mention of capital payments for creation. I know from working on other things that there are lots of other creation payment options, but within this scheme, are there going to be, or is the expectation that comes from elsewhere?
There will be capital payments for planting trees to for agroforestry. So the details of that will be published shortly. It's likely to be a similar type of process that you go through for if you want to apply for a capital grant to plant a hedge or etc.
We'll put all the prices for that when we do the full scheme information.
Lovely. Yeah. Okay, thank you. And the next one down may also be for you, please, Jonathan. Is IPM4 an action for the whole year or for a cropping year? So whole year, I think, means calendar year.
We know there's been a lot of confusion around all of this, and we've been working with the RPA to resolve it. We'll be pushing more information shortly. It makes, and I'm sort of tipping you the wink, if you like, it makes sense to apply for a crop, not particularly, rather than an agreement year. Etc.
This is a product of having rolling windows, and as we do this, we see issues emerge like this, and what we try to do is pick up specific issues like that where we think, actually, yeah, that is a fair point. We need to clarify the guidance on that and clarify it without making amendments to the guidance every single time anybody asks a question and having the whole thing being chaos. So we think we've got to do some clarification on that point because we know that there's worry about it and worry about doing it wrong, and therefore people are thinking, oh gosh, I won't go into that then. And we don't want that. So we will issue some clarification on it to make sure it's workable. And as Jonathan has dropped a fairly massive hint about what direction we think we're going in there, rightly, because it's got to fit with your farming rotation, hasn't it?
Coming back to the integration between Countryside and SFI as one agreement, will that have an impact? I'll just read it verbatim. When Countryside Stewardship and SFI become one agreement, how will the different agreement lengths for different options work?
So broadly speaking, as it works now, so you can have in a Countryside Stewardship agreement, you can have some actions that are 5 years and some that are 10. So you need to do you have an agreement that contains all those actions. And then you do the ones that are 5 years for 5 years and the ones that are 10 years for 10. And then if you want to get some more 5 year actions at that point, then you can do that. So it'll be a sort of, we're looking at these things as sort of fiendish technical questions. As soon as you start pulling at them, there's actually quite a lot of complexities to them. And we'll publish details about exactly how it will work when we publish the scheme information. But broadly speaking, you'll have an agreement and it will have the things in it that you're going to do for that period of time. And let's say you've got an agreement that's got some 5 year or 10 year things in it and some 3 year things in it. Then when those 3 year things run out, then you can apply for some more 3 year things to replace them and add those in. So it'll be a bit more like a sort of rolling agreement, really, and you'll just keep adding actions in as the old ones expire or you want to upgrade them. There was a question about upgrading. You might want to upgrade, for example, from low input grassland to species rich grassland, and we'd love you to do that. So we want to make that possible for you year by year as well. So it's much less, I've signed up to this thing and I'm now stuck with it for the next 5 years and I can't add, subtract or adjust it really in any way unless something dramatic happens, to I've got this thing, I'm starting here, but I might add this bit here or this bit run out and I'll replace it with something else, or I might want to upgrade or whatever. And you can do that, because I was talking to a farmer, a dairy farmer, who is very, like, he's really into his schemes. And he was saying he does 10 year schemes. So really he's only going to have maximum three, probably, times to decide what he's going to do in his whole farming career before he hands it on to his son. And that's mad, because he's learning new things every year about what he wants to do. And he's wanting to kind of evolve like he does his farming practice. And so we really want to go with the grain there. We know people would like to be able to do more within that period. So it'll be an agreement with whatever lengths of action you've got in it. And you'll be able to flex over time to replace the ones as they run out, basically.
And what I'll just add is, in to what Janice just said, as we look at bringing mid-tier and SFI together, there will also be opportunities, I suspect, for some of those mid-tier actions that are currently 5 years to turn them into three-year actions. Not in every case, but that we can start to align things in that way as well.
Yeah, and one of the things we're going to do is offer more actions on a three-year basis, because that works much better for people who are either just dipping their toe in and don't want to make a full five-year commitment, or have a tenancy agreement that isn't going to run for 5 years, but they're more comfortable committing for three. So we'll be doing that as well this year.
Great. Okay, I'm going to make this the last question, because there are a couple of bits of information that I and the DEFRA team would like to share at the end. Mm-hmm. Might be a short one, it might not, it's difficult to tell at the moment. Will orchard creation options be available to all?
I can pick that one up. So we are expanding the eligibility for orchards. So it's for creation, there's either going to need to be some evidence that there was an orchard there in the past, perhaps old maps or whatever, or where we are expanding some existing woodland or creating links between different tree habitats. So will that make it available to everybody? I'm sure there'll be some people that are excluded from that, but equally it will be far more available than it's been in the past.
Okay. Great, thank you. I think that's as much of a complete answer as we can expect. Obviously, we're not talking about specific instances there. I am going to bring things to a close here. Of course, thank you, Janet and Jonathan, for answering as many questions as we could get through. And I'll just say thanks for joining us again and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, everybody. And thanks, Laura.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to view the full webinar recording for this event, you can find this on our website, farmingadviceservice.org.uk, in the webinar section.